is Madison Dudley, and I am a reporter at the Student Press Law Center. This episode, we're going to go over legal tips and steps you should be taking at the beginning of the school year to protect yourself and your newsroom from credential sources to cyber copyright traps. The SPLC has you covered on what to know and how to plan for sticky situations.
Hi everyone, thank you for joining us. My name is Sarah Ingram Dean. I am the staff attorney here at the Student Press Law Center, and I'm joined by Mike Eastand, our senior legal consultant.
The number one reason that people have called us is censorship. And so what we're going to talk about today is what to do when that, you know, when censorship takes place. So one of the things that I always tell advisors and students they need to do at the beginning of the year is really kind of get a game plan in place for what happens should censorship or should some other controversy come to your newsroom. It's important to talk to your students about if something happens, you need to understand that I, as an advisor, am an employee. You know, I legally, advisors are in the same legal position as the principal. They are school officials, they're school administrators. And it's important, I think, for everybody to understand that. Because when stuff happens and the heat gets turned up, very often you find that those roles do come into play and that the advisor all of a sudden is reminded by their principal or by their superintendent that they are an employee and that they need to do their work as an employee, which is unfortunately very often kind of at odds with what an advisor wants to do as an advisor. I mean, an advisor is there because they love you. I mean, they're doing work that they believe is important. They believe in student voices. They believe in student press, and they are on your side, but they're also an employee. And so sometimes those roles conflict. In terms of the role of the advisor, when censorship happens, it's always important to know that your students are really the ones that need to take the lead on this. It's a student publication. It is student voices that are trying to be protected. And it's really important that students understand that, you know, if the principal or if a superintendent comes down and tries to censor the publication, students, not the advisor, again, the advisor is an employee, students are the ones that need to take the lead in contesting that censorship. Students need to be the one, you know, when it's important to make the phone calls to media to let them know what's happening. Students need to be the one to let parents know. Students need to be the one to contact the SPLC. You don't want, after a censorship situation has started, you don't want, as an advisor, to be telling your students, you need to call the SPLC now. That can be looked at as insubordination in many cases, challenging the school district. These are things that students need to know now when things are calm. So you need to let them know, and students, you need to know that we exist. I'd much rather have you calling me so I can tell you this is what you need to do. The other thing that students need to realize, because I see this happen all the time, is that when a censorship situation or some sort of controversy comes into play, the advisor is told specifically, I think this is lousy, but it happens. The advisor is told, don't tell your students, you know, this is something that you need to keep to yourself. Don't tell your students that I've told you this can't go forward or anything like that. And so students and advisors are in a lousy situation in that because they are employees, they have to sometimes do things they don't want to do, but they are having to keep things from students, and it gets very uncomfortable. So I would much rather that students call me up and try and walk you through what's worked. We've kind of got a pretty good system for how to contest censorship. In terms of students, the number one sort of suggestion that I can have for students is just the importance of practicing good journalism. I mean, there's knowing the law and doing a bunch of other things on the list we can get to, but beyond everything else, the best sort of censorship protection that you can have that I just, you know, desperately am looking for is good journalism. If you put together a story that you are proud to stand up and defend and take to other media and to make your case, more often than not, we're going to have a positive outcome. Where you are putting out good, competent journalism that you're proud of, whether it's published in the student newspaper or whether we take it to some other place, I mean, there are means for getting your story out there, which is right. That's the bottom line. That's what we're looking to do. But I can only help you with that if your journalism is good. Before I turn it over to Summer, who's going to talk about some copyright issues, I thought I'd also talk about kind of the role of, again, going back to advisors being employees, we've always suggested to students that if you're looking to work on a story involving confidential sources, confidential information, as sad as it is, because it's certainly nice to talk to advisors with stories like that that are somewhat tricky, it's real important that you not clue your advisor in as to who your source is. Because they are employees, they are sometimes in a position, if you tell them something, particularly if it's something involving illegal conduct, perhaps you have talked to a student that is willing to talk to you about a story you're doing on drug use at school, and maybe they're either a drug user at school or they're selling drugs or something like that. The minute that you tell your advisor that you're working on the story and that you know who this person is, your advisor very often is going to have a legal obligation to go to her principal or his principal and let them know that, you know, I know that this is happening place. It's just it's a legal obligation they have. So it's important, I think, if you're looking to do that, to use confidential sources, make sure you keep them out of it. That's also a good time maybe to give us a call. We can kind of talk to you about some of the nuances and things you want to be thinking about when you're using confidential sources.
Mike. So I just want to focus on a few issues about copyright law that we tend to see frequently here at the SPLC. The first is sort of a basic question that we tend to get a lot about who owns the copyright to work created by a student journalist. And the answer to that is generally a student will retain the copyright to his own work. So whether that's a photograph or a story or a blog post, the student will retain the copyright to that and can exercise all the rights of a copyright holder. And that's regardless of whether the student has used their own equipment or school equipment to write their story or produce their multimedia package or whatever it may be. On our website, we do have a model copyright agreement that you can have students sign to sort of minimize confusion that may come up in that area. And basically that leaves the copyright with the student, but it provides sort of a long-term license for the student media organization to use or reprint their story or their photo or whatever it may be. The next thing I want to talk about is something we've been seeing more and more frequently here, which are these automatic, auto-generated copyright infringement notices. So we are seeing situations where copyright owners have gotten creative and they are embedding codes or putting metadata that's often invisible to the naked eye into their images or into whatever work it is before it's uploaded online. Then they're able to use these computer programs to search the internet and find when their work has been reproduced without permission. So oftentimes when these programs run and they get a hit on whatever their work is, they auto-generate these letters and send them to the copyright infringer. And so I just think it's really important for you guys to know that just because you're student media, you're not exempt from that. A lot of times also these letters are demanding money. And so I just kind of want to go through some things that you can do to minimize this. Obviously, you can always contact us by calling us or contacting us through our online legal request form. But the first thing you'll want to do if you receive one of these letters is just verify that it's not a scam, because those things do happen as well. And once you verify that it's something that's accurate, and we can also help you with that, probably the first thing you'd want to do is remove infringing material. So that could be as simple as taking down the photo from the news site or whatever it is that you've been notified that you're infringing upon. Oftentimes, if you remove the material, that's shown as good faith, and that can work in your favor in the long run. I won't go into this into too much depth about this right now, but you can also look and see if you have a fair use claim. Fair use is basically a doctrine that says if you're using a work in sort of a transformative way, then you're not infringing on copyright. And again, that's something that we can help you determine here at SPLC. The one thing you don't want to do is ignore the letter. So something we often advise doing is that you can respond in writing, letting the claimant know that you're working at a student publication, you have no money. It's not a legal defense, but it may get them to sort of back down a little bit. And it's also important to know that even if you do end up having to pay, it won't necessarily be the amount that they're demanding in the letter. So a lot of things that we see, or a lot of ways people get sort of caught in this copyright trap, are by doing things just like simply copying and pasting from the internet or downloading images from Google. It's important to know that just because it's available on Google does not mean that you can freely use it. It's also important to note that just because you give credit to a person or a website for getting your image or quote or whatever from that place, that does not mean you're not infringing on the copyright, because copyright law is concerned with consent rather than attributing it to whoever you got it from. So sometimes it can be something as simple as asking for permission to use the image. You can pay for a license. You can look for things that are in the public domain, which are things that are really old, like Shakespeare or like the Mona Lisa, things where the copyright has expired.
One thing we are suggesting, and it's a pain in the behind, I know, but is now is a good time to do a kind of a copyright audit of your website, going back as far as you need to. Well, going back at least 3 years, that's the statute of limitations, but I'd go back ideally like 4 or 5 even, but looking for copyrighted images and pulling those things down. If you aren't absolutely certain, you know, that you created the image yourself or that you have permission to use it, pull it down, because unfortunately there's no hiding. They will find out if you are using an image that you don't have the right to use. I think that's about it. Just a reminder to make sure, yeah, mark our website and keep our contact information handy. Have a wonderful school year. Hopefully we don't hear from you.
This has been the Student Press Law Center podcast, produced here in Washington, D.C. The music played was called On My Way by Kevin MacLeod. You can learn more about the topics discussed in this podcast at our website, splc.org. You can also find news stories, advice, legal resources, and quizzes. For legal help, visit splc.org/legalhelp. You can follow us on Twitter at SPLC, Instagram at Student Press Law Center, and be sure to like our Facebook page. You can follow me on Twitter at Madison Dudley 18. Thanks for listening, and we hope you tune in next month.